That is 4-4.
We're going to cross over live now to a speech being delivered by the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, about the Israeli attack on Quneitra. Let's listen in.
In the Quran, in the Bible, and who keeps his promise like God? Therefore, anticipate what you have given, what you have sacrificed. This is the ultimate victory. At the beginning, I would like to welcome all of you, and I would like to thank you also for your participation, in this ceremony in honor of the beloved martyrs. At the beginning, I would like to say a few words to the families of the martyrs regarding the martyrs, the sympathy, the people then. This is my list. Then I will say a few words about what took place over the past 2 weeks or the past few days. The strategic environment, you can name it as you wish. And number three, I will speak about the assassination operation in Quneitra. Number four, the resistance operation in the Lebanese Shuba farms, the occupied Shuba farms. Number five, the conclusion, some conclusions and the stance. First of all, I would like to address the families of the martyrs. I extend my condolences to them. They have lost their loved ones. And I would also like to congratulate them because those beloved have been granted the greatest reward from God, the highest levels with God, with their martyrdom in His cause. I congratulate the families of the martyrs because their beloved have now gone from this life to the level of the real immortal life. And I pray to God that He accept from you the sacrifices, and I pray to God that He makes your martyrs your saviors and our saviors on the day of judgment, and also to give you patience and steadfastness, and also to preserve for you what He gave you, honor, dignity in this world and in the aftermath. I would also like to express my thanks to all those who shared their condolences with us and congratulated us after this martyrdom of those beloved, whether it be by direct participation or by contacting us or by statements or any other way of expression in Lebanon to Palestine. The people of Palestine and the Palestinian factions also showed unique sympathy. Syria also, Iraq, Iran, Jordan, Yemen, Tunis, Pakistan, throughout the Arab and Islamic world, and also to all those who celebrated 2 days ago and are still celebrating the unique resistance operation in the Shuba farms. I must extend my thanks specifically to the Mujahideen and the resistance fighters. I would like to express my thanks. I must express my thanks specifically to the Mujahideen fighters and the resistance fighters of the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, those who were up to the task ever since the beginning, since the opening moment of the assassination in Quneitra, and they had a very significant presence. Their morale was high and they were ready for all kinds of sacrifices over the past few days and over the past few hours up until today. I must also express my thanks to our beloved Lebanese people, to the people of resistance, to the supporters of the resistance, all those who stood side by side with this resistance, also from the very beginning, since the assassination operation in Quneitra. They participated in the funeral processions of the martyrs despite the security dangers. They expressed their sympathy. They expressed their support for any decision taken by the resistance or any decision the resistance resorts to. And on Wednesday, specifically as well, at the moment of danger, when the whole area was facing very, very major possibilities, very, very dangerous scenarios, they were there and they lived up to the promise. Just like before, they stood firm, they were patient, they stood with steadfastness. And we must indeed, every single day and every single hour, we must always describe them as the most honorable people, the most cleansed people, and the most generous people. It is our duty, as we celebrate the martyrs of the resistance, it is our duty to stand with humbleness in front of the martyrs of the heroic Lebanese army, those who were martyred in Ras Baalbek, martyred as they were defending the Beqa and Lebanon and also the frontline villages against the armed terrorist groups, armed terrorist takfiri groups. And day by day, it is proven that these groups are completing what Israel is doing. With the leadership of the army, its generals, its soldiers, the families of the martyrs who are also participating in this crime or in this operation, all I salute them and I bless them, I congratulate them. Regarding the martyrs, Muhammad Ali Allah Dadi, the leader, also Muhammad Ahmad Isa, and the Mujahid Jihad Imad Mughniyeh, and also the martyr Ali Hassan Ibrahim, and the martyr Abbas Ibrahim Hijazi, and also the martyr Ghazi Ali Dawi, and the martyr Muhammad Ali Hassan Abul Hassan. To all those martyrs, we express our sympathy, our love. Honestly, this is not just talk for the sake of talking. It is not just for the sake of this occasion. We say to those martyrs, congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. Congratulations for what you have achieved. We are your brothers. We congratulate you for what you have done. We pray to God that one day which He chooses, He can also bless us with such an honor, this same honor with which He blessed you, you martyrs. But you, our brothers, our sons, our beloved, you martyrs, just like all the other martyrs who also went before you in all different battlefields, you have now been relieved from the concerns, relieved from this life, and have now went to the life of dignity and happiness. And we have remained. We are continuing to confront the hardships of this life. And we pray to God that until that time comes, that we continue to remain firm and continue to work for your cause and to be committed to your goals and committed to your cleansed blood. Brothers and sisters, these martyrs in the Quneitra operation, it reflects the generations of the resistance. Look at the ages. The ages reflect three or four generations, different generations. These martyrs, the martyrs of Quneitra, reflect by the martyrdom of Martyr al-Ladadi and also the Commander Abu Isa, this shows the continued presence of the commanders and leaders on the battlefield side by side with the Mujahideen, the fighters. This is a secret of the strength of a resistance. These martyrs reflect the affiliation of families as a whole, not just the affiliation of individuals, the affiliation of families as a whole, their affiliation to the school of jihad and martyrdom. When this group of martyrs includes sons of martyrs, like Martyr Jihad Imad Mughniya, the son of the martyr, the former commander Imad Mughniya, also like Martyr Ali Hassan Ibrahim, who is the son of the martyr Hassan Ibrahim, like also the martyr Sayyid Abbas Hijazi, who is also a relative of Abu Ali Hassan Dib, or Abu Hassan Dib. The funeral procession was held at the same day with the father, Abu Hassan Kamal, who is one of the well-known older fighters of the resistance ever since the very beginning in 1982. These are families who stepped forward on this battlefield, on this arena, who are fighting and showing steadfastness, putting up with hardship, standing firm and sacrificing martyrs. And when Netanyahu or Ya'alon or others come out to threaten them, they respond by saying what their Imam Zainul Abidin said, the brother of Hussein, or the son of Imam Hussein, when he told Ibn Ziyad, he said, "Are you threatening me with death? You, death for us is something normal, and our dignity from Allah is martyrdom." These are families. Our families who have such a culture, who belong to such a school. These martyrs in Quneitra reflect the Iranian and Lebanese blood being mixed on Syrian soil. And please pay attention to this. These martyrs of Quneitra reflect, by the mixing of the blood, Iranian blood mixed with Lebanese blood on Syrian soil, this reflects the unity of the cause and the unity in the faith, and also the common battle. When the previous governments divided this battle, and when the political factions divided the battle, and the contradictions as well, and the divisions, then at that time we entered the phase of defeats. But when blood unified this battle, the blood from Palestine to Lebanon to Syria to Iran to all the region, then we entered the phase of victories. This group of martyrs of Quneitra shows that the Mujahideen of Hezbollah, contrary to everything which is written, we all are seeing what is written, what is being broadcast on the satellite media and the lies which are being circulated. Despite all this, these martyrs, the martyrs of the resistance in Quneitra, this shows that the Mujahideen of Hezbollah still and will always be side by side with the resistance fighters at the front lines, at the front lines on the battlefield, leading the martyrs right in front of the line of martyrs. And the whole world and everything in this world won't be able to stand between them and what they believe in and what they love. Brothers and sisters, let me now refer to the introduction. After that, we'll go speak about Quneitra and Shub'a and then conclude. Our region, unfortunately, for decades, at least ever since 1948, we have governments and peoples, they are all suffering from the presence of a cancer, of a tumor, which is called the Zionist entity or Israel. A tumor and also a terrorist state, a hostile entity and a bacteria of corruption and also a source of hegemony. Israel for decades was as such, but over the past few years Israel has once again begun to behave as it used to before, and even more corruption, more arrogance, more hegemony, more such behavior. I don't want to refer to what has happened since 1948 until today. Let's speak about now, the days we're living in, the past few months, or at least this year. In Palestine, in addition to the fact that Israel still occupies territory and sanctities in an unjust way, it is also invading the West Bank and is also, it waged a destructive war on Gaza for 52 days, whereby it committed the ugliest massacres, and it is still besieging the Strip. It is also violating the sanctities, and it is seriously threatening the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It holds thousands of Palestinians in prisons under very harsh circumstances. It does not grant the most basic human rights to the Palestinians. And you can also add others. In Syria, in addition to the fact that it still occupies the Golan Heights and has been occupying it for decades, it is taking advantage of the current war in the ugliest way, using it, and it is providing clear support for the armed Takfiri groups with the aim of destroying Syria and its army and in the day of light, it destroys the positions of the Syrian army and it launches air raids deep into Syrian territory under different justifications. And in Lebanon, in addition to the continuation of its occupation of the Lebanese Shub'a farms, Israel doesn't recognize Resolution 1701, which some of us worship. Look at the UN reports, not the report of the Lebanese government or the Lebanese resistance. Thousands of violations, of Israeli violations. They don't recognize it, whether by from air, land or sea. And it also bombs when it likes, it bombs when it wants, like it did in Jonta. And it assassinates as it wishes, like we saw with the assassination of Haj Hassan Laqis. And Lebanon is always in danger. The Israelis today are in a situation, they were and they still are, of course this requires us to address the situation. The Israelis are in a situation whereby they feel they are capable of threatening all sides, all governments, all peoples, all armies in the region, and they believe that they are capable of launching aggressions also against all sides whenever they want, day, night, assassinations, bombings, warplanes. They think that they can do as they wish. Nothing prevents them, and nothing is standing against their aggressions. Of course, they are benefiting, the Israel benefits a lot from the circumstances in the region, the current wars, especially in the neighboring countries, and the preoccupation of the armies of the region and the resistance movements of the region, the very sharp divisions in the public opinion in the Arab and Islamic world, and also the disagreements and divisions in these societies and in these countries, and also a complete absence of the Arab states, and allow me to say, the so-called Arab League. This is absent. It doesn't even, not just absent, it doesn't even exist. And this is nothing new in our understanding. Never did we rely on such institutions. However, it is becoming clear more and more, more than ever before, I say this, that the Palestinian people, Lebanese people, Syrian people, the people of the region and to the Arab people, there is nothing, no such thing as Arab states, no such thing, unfortunately, as the Arab League. Some people might exaggerate and say there's no Arabs, but no, there are Arabs. However, there is no Arab League. However, those who fight and stand with firmness and confront this challenge in Lebanon, Palestine and Syria, they're Arabs. They are the sons of this area, the people of this region. Yes, there is no existence for those Arabs, whether it be Arab money or Arab weapons or Arab media or Arab League of Nations, nor is there presence of an independent Arab decision. Of course, they open up 1 million fronts against Iran and against others, which doesn't even exist, because they are defending against something which doesn't even exist. There is no Arab decision, independent decision, yes. It is absent when the battle is against Israel. However, when the battle is within the Arab countries, when the fighting is in Syria or within Iraq or within Yemen or within Libya or, as we're seeing now, within the Sinai Peninsula, then Arab money is present, Arab weapons are present, media, Arab media is present, and we find some Arab figures who come to surface. This is nothing new. The experience of the unjust war on Gaza last year bears witness to the absence of Arab money and Arab media and Arab weapons and the Arab League of Nations, etc., etc. This is our current situation. This is our current situation. Our situation in which the latest events have occurred and the regional events are occurring. And Israel is being confronted by resistance movements in Palestine and in Lebanon, and also by the resistance axis throughout the region, in addition to Syria and Iran. Within such an atmosphere, within such an environment, within such a situation of the enemy and the friend, we witnessed the assassination operation in Quneitra. And here I will begin to talk about the third main topic of the speech. On Sunday, the 18th of January 2015, between 11:30 and 11:45 a.m., Israeli helicopters in broad daylight targeted two civilian cars which were transporting seven of our colleagues, which led to their martyrdom. They were there on a field trip. Now, up until this moment, although it became clear a few days ago, up until this moment, the assassination operation, the background of it has become clear. When, by what the Israelis said or what they leaked, because up until now, officially, they're still in a state of loss. No, this decision was taken in the cabinet, the prime minister's office, and it was also said that the head of the Israeli opposition was informed of this decision as a result of the sensitivity and importance of this operation. This means that the enemy sat down and looked into this issue and made the calculations and gathered the information and estimated the dangers and then took decisions and then went ahead and carried out the assassination. What happened in Quneitra is an assassination. That's clear. So that puts an end to what actually took place, because some analysts in the aftermath and some media outlets said that what happened was that the our brothers lost their route or actually went after a certain line which is sensitive for the Israelis, but all of this is not true. What is true is the following. we have an Israeli decision to target this group. And this decision was made, God only knows, 1 week ago, 2, 3 months ago, God only knows. The timing of the decision is not clear, but the decision was made at the highest levels in the Zionist enemy's entity, and the opposition leader in Israel was informed, and they're waiting for the hour of action, and the time came on Sunday. So we witnessed a public, an open assassination operation in broad daylight. There is nothing which is suspicious. I will be clear to you today because there are some things which we want to be clear about. Now, for example, when the assassination operation of Hassan Lakis was carried out, some could have said then, you're saying Israel, who says it's Israel? Okay, in that case, I could say that there could be some suspicions, but we are convinced that Israel and all the information points to Israel, and this will be completed. However, from the beginning, maybe some could say it's not clear. Why do you quickly jump to that conclusion? However, we witnessed a clear assassination operation in broad daylight, which is completely similar, very much the same as the assassination operation of our leader and our beloved Sayyid Abbas Musawi and his wife Yasir and their son Hussein in broad daylight as well. That operation is very similar. It's the same as this one. It's no coincidence. It's no mistake. Sayyid Abbas didn't get lost on the road. No, it's clear. Of course, this description will lead to results. I'm not just trying to fill up time. It's not my job to analyze. I'm saying this in order to reach a conclusion and issue the stance. Now, the Israelis did not claim responsibility for the operation on the 18th of January, on Sunday. And up until now, I don't know if there is an official claim of responsibility from the Israelis because they're still stalling. When they speak about it, they say that the operation which Israel is assumed to have carried out or which Israel is accused of carrying out. So there's some stalling. Maybe the Israelis assumed that Hezbollah will absorb the operation, won't announce it, and won't say the Israelis killed us. And maybe because if Hezbollah says the Israelis killed us in Quneitra in front of its supporters and in front of the people in light of deterrence and the rules of the game, Hezbollah would be in a very different, and now Hezbollah is preoccupied and is also confused and weakened and exhausted. In addition, sometimes when we read what is being written about us, we feel sorrow towards those who are writing. Are they feeling that much pain for our sake? Maybe they assumed that Hezbollah would absorb the operation and, okay, I lost martyrs in Syria, okay, we're losing martyrs. This is nothing hidden. This is something which took place in broad daylight, and we are proud of those martyrs, and we raise our heads high, and we consider them as the martyrs of resistance and the path to Al-Quds. The Israelis maybe assumed that Hezbollah would say they were martyred in Syria just like the others who were martyred in Syria and then would disassociate itself from any political repercussions or repercussions related to the rules of the game, etc. And so maybe the Israelis up until now, once again, maybe the colleagues know, but they haven't claimed responsibility. I believe that the first surprise from Hezbollah to the Israelis was that just half an hour after the operation, Hezbollah officially announced the first statement that a group of Hezbollah fighters who were inspecting an area in Quneitra were subject to an attack by Israeli helicopters which led to casualties, and the names of the martyrs will be announced soon. On the same day, we announced the names of the martyrs, 7, 6 plus 1, who was our beloved, the General Abdullah Dadi, who deserves to be higher than a general. Here, between brackets, We didn't hide our martyrs, nor did we put them aside. We don't also decrease the number. Between brackets, I say to the whole world, to the enemy, friend, to the rival, to those who are against us, to those who love us, when 50 martyrs fall, we say 50 martyrs and we say their names. When there are five martyrs, we say these are five martyrs, these are their names, and we are proud of them. So let us put this aside. Between brackets, let us put aside and make it clear. And we announced the names of the martyrs. This was the first surprise for the Israelis. And then the killer became confused. Imagine, on Sunday, after the martyrdom of the martyrs of Quneitra and the announcement, there was a new situation. The killers were in a difficult situation. And those who were killed were not confused, were not in a difficult situation, were clear. And I will come to this. We know where we're going, but the killers don't know where they're going. Okay. What is the excuse for the assassination? Let's go one by one. What's the excuse? What they said, what the Israelis said, or what they leaked by their commentators and by their editors, was there were several excuses, but they all lead to the same fundamental issue. One time they said that this group was attacked because they wanted to launch an attack in the occupied Golan Heights. I'm going to refer to the details that this group, these two cars, were in an area which is just 6 kilometers away from the separation line, and between them and the borderline, there are thousands of fighters from Al-Nusra Front. So these fighters in that particular location are coming to launch an operation against the Israelis. And they also said that they are coming to prepare for operations which will be launched in the aftermath. And they also said, the Israelis also said, they are coming to inspect or to prepare for putting together launching pads in the area. All of it evolves around one main issue: the resistance in the Golan Heights. This in of itself is a topic which I won't be able to speak about in this speech. It requires details which I will talk about later. But they assumed, this is what they said, that there is some kind of a resistance, some kind of a resistance structure, some kind of beginning of resistance, and therefore we must take the initiative and strike those people. That's what they said. It's not me analyzing, that's what they said. The big question which should be posed to everyone now, to the Syrian people and to the Syrian opposition, before the Syrian government, it should be asked to the Syrian opposition and the Lebanese people and the Palestinian people. I really hope that the Palestinian people, who are our partners completely, and we are their partners in blood and pain and in joy and sorrow and victory, everything, and all the people of the region, let them just take a look at this question, think about this question. What is at the border of Israel, on the borderline in the Golan Heights? What is there on that borderline where Israel occupies? From where it occupies until the last point where we have presence of the Syrian army on the other side. What exists in this area in 6 or 7 kilometers, in this range of 6 or 7 kilometers? In that area, we have Al-Nusra Front. Thousands of fighters who have tanks, who have also artillery, who have rockets, who have all kinds of weapons and also have anti-tank weapons and huge amounts of explosives and also military positions and military fortifications. Now, Al-Nusra Front, who is it? Let us also remind those who don't remember. It is the Syrian branch of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, which is blacklisted and placed on the terrorist list of the United Nations and the US and the West and the Arab states. The Syrian branch of Al-Qaeda, designated internationally and westernly, or Western, from Western countries and Arab countries as a terrorist group, has a huge military presence between the Syrian Arab army and the border fence in the Golan Heights, occupied Golan Heights. Netanyahu doesn't feel any anxiety, any fear regarding this presence. Yalon, who says he's a strategist, he says why it's a normal car and not an armored car. Yalon doesn't feel any concern regarding this presence. No, they even help. They help them, they provide air cover for them, and they open the borders for the wounded so they can get treated in Israeli hospitals, and they also inspect and visit the wounded. Netanyahu personally goes and visits those wounded. Israel, which doesn't feel any concern whatsoever regarding those people, but it takes a very dangerous decision because it feels concern regarding two civilian cars transporting seven fighters who have no rockets or explosives. They only have their own individual weapons. A question to the Arab world, to the Arab people, to the resistance movements, to all sides. Some reached a level of hatred whereby they said, what happened, happened. I have a problem called the Syrian regime. I have a problem which is Iraq, Egypt. You must, if you want to forget Israel, forget it. We don't want to forget Israel. We can't forget Israel. If you want to forget the Palestinian people, you can. We can't and we won't. We shall not forget the Palestinian people. This is our culture, the culture of our fathers and grandfathers and our children and grandchildren. Our children, by their martyrdom, are reflecting this path. And wait, and you'll see that the grandchildren, our grandchildren, will also reflect this meaning by their martyrdom. So this is a very big question. What's the answer? It's something which you must stand and take a look at. Anyway, after the operation, a lot was written about it, its significance and who it targeted. I will stop here and speak about the Shabaa Farms. Just, I want to make one more point in this topic. What was required, what the Israelis assumed would happen after the operation, what those who loved Israel assumed would happen after the operation, was that Hezbollah would be in a state of loss, would be in a state of anxiety, would not know what it wanted to do, where should it hide, what could it do. And there were a lot of evaluations made about the significance of this assassination. Before I speak about the next subject, let me express our feelings honestly. And this was expressed by many of our colleagues in during their gatherings and during the meetings. The operation, the assassination operation in Quneitra, there is a painful side, which is the humanitarian side. Yes, we do feel pain. If some people imagine we don't feel pain, of course we feel pain and sorrow. And we do feel sorrow. And the families of the martyrs feel sorrow when they cry. I tell them, cry, there's no problem. Don't say we don't want to cry. No, cry. Now, someday, if I don't cry, this is related to the media war, psychological war, but far away from the cameras, I cried. I am a father, just like all other fathers. So, at the humanitarian level, when it comes to humane fear, of course, we lost our beloved ones. Now, regarding all other aspects, everything that happened, everything related to this catastrophe, we don't view it except as being a blessing, except as having benefits, except as being something good, a gift from God, God's kindness. Let the Israelis think in such a way. Let's set the human, our own human feelings aside. Everything else is positive and also goodness, gracious from God for our path, for our resistance, for our cause, for our region. And here as well, we always draw our lessons from Karbala because it is the event which summarizes a lot of values and meanings. Here also, we take our lessons from Sayyida Zainab, may peace be upon her, when she countered Ubaydullah bin Ziyad. He asked, how do you view what God did to your brother? How you were slaughtered, cut to pieces. What did Sayyida Zainab say? May peace be upon her. This is our culture. I didn't see anything but beauty. I didn't see anything but beauty. Those are a group who God said must fight, and then they went and fought. They did the task. Of course, though the other group will be punished, but look at the courage. The courage of Imam Hussein and his family. If we compare it to the Quneitra and other battles, it's nothing. Of course, in Quneitra we feel sorrow regarding the loss of our beloved, but we say, just like Sayyida Zainab, may peace be upon her, said, we didn't see anything but beauty. Our seven brothers, they are a group who God said must fight, and so they went and did what they should do. And between us and this enemy, we have this life and the aftermath. From the very beginning, let me now speak about the next topic. I will take some extra time today because I'm the only speaker. I take my share on the share of the one who usually speaks before me. From the very beginning, after the announcement of the assassination and the revelation of the names of the martyrs, the enemy and the friend and the neutral side, they were all preoccupied with analysis and expectations. There was a central question. Will Hezbollah respond or will it be silent? And if Hezbollah does respond, when and where and how? And what will be the limits of this response, and what are the dangerous repercussions of this response? These questions from Sunday until Wednesday. Wednesday, we relieved all the experts to answer. But until Wednesday, these questions were being asked. But the bigger issue was with the Israelis. The bigger discussions were amongst the Israelis. What we read in Lebanon and the region, we read a lot of studies and expectations, some analyzed in a neutral way, regardless of liking us or hating us, some analyzed out of their love for us, some analyzed out of their hatred for us. Anyway, whatever be, let's put this aside. The questions which were answered, which were posed, have been answered. But the bigger issue was amongst the Israelis. What were the Israelis were subject to after Hezbollah announced the assassination in Quneitra? This is the important issue which I want to talk about before I refer to the Shub'a farms. You are supposed to be a superpower regionally, and you killed deliberately. Not by mistake or not by coincidence. No, you took a decision, Israel. How did the Israelis deal with it? Now, I don't want to make explanations, but I'll refer to some important points. The way they dealt with the operation in the media and politically, was it them, not them? No, not us. Did they discuss it? Is it assumed? It's not clear yet. As I said, I still don't know if the Israelis have officially claimed responsibility and said we did it. But for 10 days, they continued in such a way where it wasn't clear. The way also they dealt with the martyrdom of Muhammad Ali Allah Dadi. Were they surprised? Were they not surprised that there was an Iranian general also amongst that group? Were they confused? What should they say? Sending messages by the media and some close related commentators. Maybe some officials won't speak, but the officials might tell their friends who are commentators to express the stance. Israel was in a state of alert, especially in the northern areas and in the Golan Heights, and sending the Iron Domes to the north. They left one only in Gaza, but they brought all the other Iron Domes to us in the north. Measures in the north, precautionary measures, also state of alert at the intelligence level 100%. And from Sunday until the Wednesday, if you go to the Lebanese-Palestinian borders, would you find any farmer, soldier, military vehicle, tanks, car? No, you wouldn't find anything. Even in the settlements, they all went and hid. They said there's nothing, but they went and they hid. And they were afraid. Also, measures being sent by different countries. At the same time, threats and promises. If Hezbollah responds, we will do this, we will do that to Lebanon, to Syria, to the region. This was said in public and also in private. However, all of Israel, all of its political leaders, its generals, its inhabitants, its settlers, its soldiers, its military personnel, their focus, their eyes, ears, their minds were all set on Lebanon. Where in Lebanon? On Hezbollah, on one word, on one smile, one signal, one stance. What will this party do? Israel, let me speak in a to the capability of the resistance and its value and its readiness was that from Sunday until Wednesday, Israel was standing on 1.5 legs, waiting for Hezbollah in Lebanon. Not on 2 legs, on 1.5. This is because of the blessing of the blood of the martyrs and the determination of the fighters and the determination of the supporters of the resistance fighters. Some assumed that now all hell will break loose against Hezbollah. Iran will call. Allow me to speak freely. Some said, for example, Iran would call and say, be careful, Iran will call. Allow me to speak freely. Some said, for example, Iran would call and say, be careful, we have nuclear negotiations, P5+1, there's a good chance that a solution will be reached, so don't do anything. Or the Syrian leadership will say, they're threatening, they might strike us. You know, today the priority is fighting the others. I say no. Syria, Iran, friend, those who love us, no one of those friends, none of them, would satisfy or would agree to us being humiliated. None of those beloved would be satisfied or would accept our blood to be spilt without responding. Also, between brackets, I'm just closing some files here, between brackets, this continuous talk about Iranian nuclear talks, no, there's nothing in Lebanon which is related to this. Let all the Lebanese, everyone be aware, there is nothing here related to the Iranian nuclear negotiations, whether it be the presidential elections in Lebanon or the decision of the resistance to respond to any aggression. This is something which is Lebanese, which the Iranians respect. Iran respects our interests, it respects our dignity. So, between brackets, close this case. This stance was enough to tell the Israelis and the whole world, to tell the Israelis, look, you cannot kill people and then go and sleep and rest reassured, and your farmers go and go about their daily lives, and your soldiers take walks on the border and feel safe. and secure as if you killed insects. No. From the very beginning, Israel, the Israelis confessed that they are confronting a different reality. And also the Israelis put together or put all the scenarios on the table. A non-response, a response, and when they referred to the response, they spoke about the least possible response to targeting infrastructure and institutions, etc. Because the Israelis know that the resistance is capable and the resistance is ready, and that everything which has been said until now, you know who knows more than anyone else? The Israelis. People who don't trust us, they say, you're saying this, okay. But the Israelis, regardless of whether or not they trust us, their information tells them. This might be some of the blessings of the spies. They help in psychological warfare. So the enemy knows that this circle of scenarios are all possible. All these scenarios are possible for Hezbollah. Hezbollah is capable of carrying out all of these, each one of these scenarios. Now, we haven't reached the operation itself yet. As the Israelis were confused and discussing, the whole region was waiting. And I will say also, with all transparency, from the very beginning on Sunday, just after the operation, we were clear. Then we needed to meet and take decisions, but we were clear. But when we met, the discussion didn't take more than 10 minutes. I will say what happened because it will give a clue, signals the future path, not just for the sake of history, to refer to the future path. We, from the very beginning, we were very clear. We must respond. That was our stance, that we must respond. There was no hesitation, no, not even 0.1%. of room for discussion. The Israelis must be punished for the crime they committed in Quneitra, and we must put an end to this ongoing Israeli crimes and aggressions and killings and arrogance. And that this requires, we also said that this requires sacrifice, even if situations reach the end, even if the situation reaches the end. So we decided where the operation should take place, the nature of the operation, the time of the operation, what kind of operation, what the choices are for the resistance fighters. We looked into them and we based our calculations on the worst scenarios. The worst possible scenario. We prepared ourselves for the worst scenarios and we took measures based on these calculations. And this is what the Israelis fully understood before Wednesday, because there was a lot of movement that the Israelis were aware of. The Israelis understood that any bullet fired from any place they expect, they know that he who is opening fire now, he is ready to go to further than anyone could imagine in the world, and ready for this. So this was related to deterrence, to the result which the events ended with in the Shuba farms and the border. Then we saw the unique operation of the Mujahideen and the Shuba farms on Wednesday around 11:30, and God helped us in all different aspects, and we thank God. We plan, of course, and we make preparations, and our fighters take all the measures, but everything else, then God. God is the one who makes us achieve victory. Even the result, this number or that number, this is all God's work. This professionalism which you speak about, we rely on God for this. Yes, we do have professionals. Yes, there's no mistaking that. Then the operation took place. This is some of the uniqueness of this operation. Many spoke about it. It took place right in the midst of the Israeli state of alert and preparations. The Israelis were aware. The Israelis from beginning Sunday, they saw all of the measures. They were spying on us. There are cellular phones. They were eavesdropping and spying, and there were measures which were taken. The Israelis understood. So from Sunday night and Monday, they were at the highest level of alert, intelligence level, the spies, the border, the precautionary measures, the front, everything. Even if an insect passes, they should spot it on the border. So they took all the measures. However, the resistance in broad daylight and right in the midst of the state of alert, it carried out this unique operation in the Shubha farms. And the Israelis were incapable. I say this to the enemy, to the people of the enemy, because the people consider that the army is the strongest army. I'd like to tell them that in right in the midst, at the high, at the peak of the state of alert, and they have all of this surveillance and a very difficult area, at this same time, the Israelis were not able to know what happened from the beginning of the operation till the end. And when our fighters came back, the Israelis knew, or they awoke. This is a message to the enemy, to the people of the enemy, and to the friends, to our friends, to the most honorable people who are always, there are always efforts made to shake the confidence of the supporters of the resistance. Even the enemy said this. The enemy said it was a smart, professional operation, a secret operation. Yes, this is your resistance. As a result of this operation, now we go to the stance. The result of this operation was they killed us in broad daylight, we killed them in broad daylight. 11:30 or 11:45, either 11:30, 11:25 or 11:35. So they killed us 11:30, 11:45, we killed them 11:25 or 11:35. Two cars, on the other hand, we targeted two cars plus and more. People killed and wounded, and we have martyrs. Now, regarding the numbers, we'll see how we can solve that. Missiles, on the other side, we also had missiles. We didn't plant an impoverished explosive device, no. In broad daylight, the people on the battlefield, they launched these rockets from their shoulders. There are two differences between us and the Israelis. The first is because the Israelis are cowards, because they're not real men, and because they don't fight except behind fortifications or behind walls. They attacked us by surprise. But the men of resistance, because they are real men, because they don't fear death, they came face to face. There's a second difference. The Israelis didn't have the courage. They carried out this act, but they didn't have the courage to claim responsibility for the operation. But the resistance claimed responsibility in statement number one, directly after the operation took place. Therefore, this is what happened up until now. So, as a conclusion, because they're still stalling, the conclusion, the result now, is all they got was disappointment. All they will get is disappointment, and the only thing we will get is victory. And those, our fighters who were killed are in heaven, their fighters who were killed are in hell. Now, to issue the statement, It is our duty here to express my thanks and to salute the Mujahideen of the resistance and their leaders who from the very beginning, since the assassination took place, they were working very precisely. And I must salute specifically the heroic Mujahideen who carried out this unique operation right at the heart of the enemy, and I kiss their hands and I kiss their raised foreheads. Now, the conclusion and the stance. Of course, a lot of what was said regarding the conclusion was correct, but I just want to make some additions. The Israelis have now discovered, and over the past few days, because there are some deliberations in Israel now, there are elections, and so deliberations take place. They have discovered that the estimations made by their politicians, by their security and military officials, were stupid estimations, although they introduced themselves as people who have experience, not like Olmert and Peretz, those who, we're going to forget their names or we forgot their names, but those who claim that they're very professional and they're experts, no, their estimations were all wrong. And their expectations were all wrong, and the Israelis discovered that their leadership put them on the abyss of major dangers which could have been inflicted on them or their entity, their interests, their security and their economy, everything they have, as a result of this stupidity which this Israeli leadership committed. And this assassination backfired, and there will be more negative repercussions against Israel. Second of all, the Israeli army and the security services and all of its capabilities are not capable of confronting the will of the resistance and its battlefield operations. No, this is Israel. Israel, we defeated it in 2000, and the people of Gaza defeated it many times, and Israel, whom we defeated in 2006, and Israel, whom we defeated yesterday, is easier to defeat and penetrate than the spider web. It will always be as such. Number three in the conclusions is that the resistance in Lebanon is in its complete health and professionalism and courage and wisdom and presence, etc., 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 until we lose our breath. Number four, the Takfiri armed groups, and especially those who are present on the borders, occupied borders in the Golan Heights, they are natural allies of the Israeli enemy, and they are the Lahad army of Syria, the new Lahad army of Syria, even if they raise the Islamic flag. Now, regarding the stance, first of all, I would like to stress, because after the interview with the Mayadeen, a lot of analysis was made, a lot of talk was said, how it was said. I would like to stress, in order not to repeat myself, because I said a lot of things in that interview about the equation, that I'd like to stress on every single word I said in the interview with Al-Mayadeen regarding the resistance and the confrontation with the enemy. I don't need to repeat, but I say today, after what happened on Sunday in Qunaitra and Wednesday in the Shab'a farms, you tried us, don't try us again. Number two. And this is the most important message which we can get out of what took place. If you want to ask me what's the most important thing for 1 hour and 5 minutes, not 1.5 hours, 1 hour and 5 minutes. I might end before 1.5 hours. If you ask me what's the most important thing I said, it's this sentence: to the friends and the enemies, we'll speak with them, no problem. And we appreciate the feelings and the natural interests, and the resistance have proven that it behaves in a responsible, wise way. But the Israelis must understand, let me say it in Arabic, traditional Arabic, so I can translate it in Hebrew. The Israelis must understand very well that this resistance is not deterred. They always say it's deterred. No, it's not deterred. It is wise, but not deterred. There's a difference between wisdom and being afraid. Sometimes one is courageous and capable, but he's also wise. Sometimes one is a coward or incapable. This has nothing to do with wisdom, but this resistance is courageous and capable and wise and is not deterred. And if the Israeli enemy believes that the resistance is deterred, if it believes that the resistance is deterred and that it's afraid of war, I'd say to the enemy on this commemoration of the martyrs of Quneitra and after the unique operation of the Shub'a farms, let this enemy be aware. We are not afraid of war. We are not afraid of war, and we will not be hesitant in fighting this war, and we will fight this war if it's imposed, and we will achieve victory in it, God willing. Let the Israelis not make mistakes. And I think on Wednesday, this was the most important message out of Wednesday. It wasn't only the Shub'a farms operation itself, what took place before it, after it, around it. All this is read by the Israelis, and they should take this message for as it is. I'm not saying this out of as part of psychological warfare. This is the truth which we expressed on the battlefield. To the friends and to the those who love us, I say there's a big difference between saying you want a war. We don't want a war. That's not talk, that's not weak talk. This is our people, our country, our villages, our allies, and no, nobody. The resistance in Lebanon or the resistance in Palestine, no one wants a war, such a war. We were obliged to become a resistance always ready militarily because we had a widespread Israeli aggression. There's a difference. I don't want war. No, we don't want war. But we are not afraid of war. We must differentiate between the two. The Lebanese must differentiate between the two. Even when they take a stance, the Israelis also must understand this very well. We are not afraid of war. We behave in a wise way. We don't want to go to war. No, I'm not ashamed of this. We don't want to go to war, but we're not afraid. But we're not afraid of war. We're not afraid of war. Let me repeat it again until they can memorize them. The Israelis and all those who are listening, listen very well, that we are the men and the mujahideen, and we are the ones who bring about big victory with God's help and God's will. Number three, and I also hope they listen very well here. Today, after the operation of the martyrs of Quneitra and the response in the Shub'a farms, I want to be clear. We in the Islamic resistance in Lebanon, we are no longer concerned with anything called the rules of engagement. I don't recognize, we don't recognize rules of engagement. That's it. Or in fighting the aggressions. And we no longer recognize dividing up or separating the battlefields. Is that clear? And it's our right. It's our right, our religious, humanitarian, legal right, even according to international law, if anyone wants to discuss with me from the international law perspective, it's our right to confront the aggression, whatever be this aggression at any time, whatever be the form of this aggression, it's our right to confront it at any time, any place, and in any form whatsoever. This issue about I struck you here, you strike me there, that's it, that's gone. That's ended. You struck me here, I strike you there, that's ended. Wherever possible, at any time possible, it's the right of the resistance to respond. At any place, any time, in any form, anywhere. Number four. We heard the Israelis, when they wanted to absorb the Shiba Farms operation, they said, okay, that's it. And anyway, he who stands behind this attack will pay the price dearly. Now, some people might understand it as political talk, but allow me here just to look into the details. I understand. Let me tell the Israelis what me and my colleagues, what we understood. We understood that the Israelis are running away from the military confrontation and are searching for those who are responsible, who are the individuals who humiliated Israel on Wednesday in the Shiba Farms, to assassinate them by an explosive device or by a spy or sending a commandos group to Lebanon like they used to and like they are still doing by the sea or land. This is what we understood. So based upon this, as well, yes, we used to separate. For example, you ask me, and I pointed out to this before, you asked me what's the difference between the assassination of the Quneitra martyrs and the assassination of Haj Hassan Laqis. We're speaking about the new martyrs. Haj Imad, will speak about him in the other occasion. What's the difference? This is a clear military operation which doesn't require any discussion. But on the other hand, it's a security operation which is suspicious. But I swear to God that the Israelis also assassinated Haj Hassan Laqis. Anyway, based upon this, we used to deal with military action as something which requires a response. We decide the time, place, and the form, like what happened previously. However, when we see a security assassination, then we are patient and let us be sure. My message today, from now on, when it comes to any one of Hezbollah's fighters, any youth of Hezbollah's youth, any one of them who is killed in such a manner, we will hold Israel responsible and we'll consider it's our right to respond at any place, any time, and in the way which we find suitable. And war, one day it's for you, one day it's against you. One day your enemy makes achievements, one day you make. I took your time, but I wanted to give the topic what it deserves. This experience of Sunday, January 18 until today, is a very rich experience. It is not an operation and a counter-operation, no. Some commentators, this is not what I said, some commentators said that what took place in the Shiba Farms is bigger than a revenge and smaller than a war. That's right, that's a correct description. These past 2 weeks that have, well, we have witnessed during this period, the whole region witnessed something which was bigger than a confrontation and less than a war. It requires being studied and looked into, and we also should draw lessons from it politically and also militarily at the moral level. We at the same time whereby we stress on all these stances I mentioned, at the same time our brothers have also proven that they behave with the appropriate responsibility, the appropriate national responsibility and religious responsibility, and they are not taken by enthusiasm, nor are they taken by their feelings. Despite responsibility and the precise responsibility, so I don't need to reassure you more. Anyway, even the martyrs, they are the ones who open the path for us, and they promise us with the decisive victory and with hope. From 1982 until today, we have always concluded our statements by saying the resistance itself is a response, and the martyrs bring about victory. The martyrs brought about victory and will bring about more victories, God willing. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah, speaking there live after the Israeli attack on Quneitra, in which six Hezbollah members as well as an Iranian commander were killed. And of course, we've had that retaliatory attack by Hezbollah also take place against Israel. Sayyid Nasrallah saying that Israel is a terrorist state which has carried out the worst atrocities in Gaza and threatens the Al-Aqsa Mosque. He said it bombs and kills whenever it feels like doing so. And he said Lebanon is therefore always in danger. He said the Arab states and the Arab League doesn't even exist, that they don't do anything to stop these Israeli atrocities against the peoples of the region. He said it doesn't exist when it must fight against Israel, but does so when the battle is within Arab countries such as in Libya, Syria, etc. He said then we see Arab money and arms flowing as well as media support for such cases. He said the enemy, i.e. Israel, took a measured and known act. He said its attack in Quneitra was a calculated assassination. He said al-Nusra is the Syrian branch of al-Qaeda, but Israel has no problem with its presence in Syria. He said it even allows for their wounded to come into Israel. He said, though, it feels concern when it sees two vehicles with seven people in them who only had their personal arms on them. He said Israel had hoped that Hezbollah would be in a state of shock and anxiety in the wake of that assassination, but it was disappointed. And he said until Wednesday, questions about Hezbollah's retaliation were raised. He said everyone was thinking, what will Hezbollah do? He said none of our friends, Syria or Iran, would be okay with our blood being spilled without a response. He said that Israel must be punished for its crime in Quneitra and its ongoing crimes and arrogance. And he said that that requires sacrifice. He said that Hezbollah decided where that retaliatory operation would take place. And even with the Israelis' obsessive care, he said that Hezbollah attacked them in broad daylight. He said that people say that Israel is the strongest army, yet it wasn't able to know what happened before, during, or even after that retaliatory operation against it. He said in broad daylight, shoulder-fired rockets were fired by Hezbollah fighters. He said that Israel attacks us by surprise, but we attack them face to face as men. He also spoke about the fact that the resistance is currently healthy and strong. He said, warning Israel that you tried us in Quneitra, but do not try us again. And speaking to the Israelis again, he said the Israelis must understand that the resistance is not deterred. We are wise and courageous, but not scared, he said. We are not afraid of war and will be not hesitant to fight and win. He said that Hezbollah does not, in fact, want a war, but that is not weak talk. He said, we were obliged to become a military resistance because of the widespread and continuing Israeli aggression. He said that from this day onwards, again warning Israel, any Hezbollah member who is killed, Israel will be directly held responsible and Hezbollah will respond. Again, that was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement, who is speaking there live. We'll, of course, have further analysis on that in our forthcoming news bulletins. Thanks for watching.